Welcome to another episode of Friends in Wonder. I'm Vince Kern, and along with co-host Joe Luther, we wonder together about the exciting, fun, and sometimes difficult things we face in this life's adventure. We're always grateful if you like, subscribe to, or share this show, and you can do so by going to friendsinwonder.com or send us feedback at talk@friendsinwonder.com. Now we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's topic. You know, when we choose our topics, we generally have them listed out in advance. But this week's topic kept popping up to Joe and myself in various ways. And we didn't really tell each other it was popping up until last week. And so we decided to tackle this tough topic today and share some of our personal experiences with you.
Yeah, today we're talking about death and grieving. And sadly, the reason that keeps popping up is because we've been experiencing a lot of that personally, not just direct experience of close loved ones, but people who are close to us who are going through similar experiences. There's just, I guess, part of the issue with living into your older years is that these kinds of things are going to happen. And, you know, certainly Vince and I, you know, have lost parents. In fact, both of us have lost all of our parents. And that's to be expected, right? I mean, obviously you like it to be as long a life as possible, but what really drove it home for me as a topic was when a very close friend of mine died, and I experienced grieving in a way that was new and different because it was so unexpected. This was not part of what I had preconceived in my mind. You know, it wasn't a parent. It wasn't an 80-something year old. This was somebody who I considered a brother. And so the process of grieving was very real to me, and it still is real, even though it's been a while. I'm still going through that process. And now as Vince and I see more and more of this, we thought today would be a good idea to try to tackle this topic.
Right. Because sooner or later, everybody's going to grieve, whether it's the loss of a loved one, even the loss of a pet. Brings up a lot of issues about loss, and we're no experts. And sooner or later, everybody does become an expert. You go through this process.
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's experiential. There's no right or wrong way. And we prepared ourselves for this episode. We started looking around, and we saw, wow, there's a lot of tools out there for people. And kind of true to Western society, there's books on various stages of grieving. There's books on, you know, kind of like the list style of grieving. And, you know, we wanted to ask the question, is that good?
Yeah. And, you know, any tool that helps somebody grieve should be considered a good tool. I know for me, I think it was when my father died. I looked up the seminal book on grieving, which is called On Grief and Grieving, Finding the Meaning of Grief Through the Five Stages of Loss, which eventually was turned into Seven Stages of Loss in a update by Elizabeth Ross Kubler and David Kessler. And in that book, they outline that the seven stages of grieving are shock, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, testing, and acceptance. And it became clear to me from my own personal experience that there was no clinical process to this. In fact, the authors said that they did not intend this to be a clinical process for grieving, because how do you define grieving? It's different for everybody. everybody has a very personal experience. And yet it kind of made me think about the fact that our culture is very clinical in terms of processing things. And are we getting away from sitting with death and being with the spirit, and are some of the things that we do today interfering with our ability to grieve?
Yeah. And, you know, again, that's not to say that these aren't valuable tools, but more that what we're doing is to ask the question, does it help? Because when I was going through my process, like you, I didn't know whether I should or shouldn't be feeling something. And, you know, this idea of anger or, you know, acceptance, all of those things, like, when am I going to feel that? It in my mind, it might take away from just sitting with it. And that's part of, you know, both the great thing about modern society, and maybe one of the things that creates us to be separate from our feelings and from our spiritual experiences. And instead of just sitting with it and processing it ourselves, we're looking to tools, and in a way, maybe living in denial.
Yeah. And one of the great teachers on being in the present moment, in fact, the author of the book, The Power of Now, one of our favorite, I don't know what you'd call him, Joe, a philosopher?
Yeah, I mean, prophet, Eckhart Tolle. You want to talk about great tools on the internet to help you grieve. You know, we're fortunate that this man lives at a time when the internet and YouTube and podcasts and whatnot are available to record him. I know I personally turned to his work when I was grieving, and we wanted to maybe play a couple of clips during this episode because we think it's so relevant. And the first one actually talks about what we were just discussing, and that is this idea that various cultures approach death differently.
All right, let's bring that one in.
One could say every form obscures God, and the death of the form enables God, which is the formless one life, to shine through. Therefore, death has long been recognized as sacred in ancient cultures who had not denied death, whereas the modern culture, modern Western civilization, denies death.
Yeah, wow, I love the way he approaches a topic. And in this case, you know, the topic of death in cultures being considered sacred, and in modern society, maybe the question that he raises and the question that we're raising is, are we living in denial of it? And does that make it more difficult for us to go through the grieving process?
Yeah, and you know, as cultures change, and certainly in our time, we've seen all kinds of change. You know, funerals well into the 20th century in the United States and Europe, they were basically done in the home, and they were open to the public rather than just for friends and family. And the body would usually be displayed in the front parlor, but sometimes in the loved one's bedroom. And, you know, as news of the death spread, people came and paid their respects, which contrasts that to today, where there's a funeral home involved and, you know, the hospitals. And I recall very distinctly when my dad passed away, being in the funeral home's office with my mother having to choose a casket and sign papers and make this decision and make that decision. And it's a time when, you know, you maybe you want to be starting that personal grieving process, but you can't. So that made me to wonder about how our culture is treating death. And does that cause us to fear death? I mean, if you think about a family sitting in their home with their loved one for days, you know, there's certainly a big difference between that and driving back and forth to different places.
Right. And it drives home this idea of, you know, embracing the concept of death as sacred versus, you know, outsourcing it as a process to be done by a third party. And we're not saying one way is right or wrong, but what we are trying to shine a light on is that by the way we do it now, it may interfere with some of our ability to grieve.
And certainly all of those things need to be done in today's culture. You know, the funeral home services, all of the things that we've just talked about. But interestingly enough, a lot of scholars and morticians are observing that a lot of people in American culture lack the explicit mourning rituals that help people deal with loss. And, you know, there's this sort of two-phase thing, I think, from my experience, which is, and everybody says, you know, the hardest part is when everybody goes home after the luncheon. And so that begins the process of your real personal, unobstructed right. thoughts.
Right. A modern grieving stages almost in our society are, you know, picking out caskets, picking out places for a lunch, deciding who's going to do readings or, you know, who's going to be the eulogist and that kind of stuff. And then suddenly all the relatives are gone and all the loved ones and the support and the potlucks, if you will, whatever the process is for each individual person is complete. And then we're left with picking up the pieces from there. And in many ways, that's when the grieving really begins. And I know for me personally, that's how I began processing the death of my very close friend. And it was after all of the busy work. And then you're left with, okay, what do we do with stuff? That still becomes a busy work process. And in fact, when I went through the process of helping wind up his estate and disperse his belongings, and we even created a memorial fund for him. When all that was finally over and there were no more to-dos, that was when true reality started to set in for me.
And our good friend Eckhart has a great clip about that. And I think we should probably bring that in here.
This is one of my favorites. I think nothing better than to play it first and then talk about it.
When you walk through a forest that has not been tamed and interfered with by man, you will see not only abundant life all around you, but you will also encounter fallen trees and decaying trunks, rotting leaves and decomposing matter at every step. Wherever you look, you will find life as well as death. Upon closer scrutiny, however, you will discover that the decomposing tree trunk and rotting leaves not only give birth to new life, but are full of life themselves. Microorganisms are at work. Molecules are rearranging themselves. So death isn't to be found anywhere. There's only the metamorphosis of life forms. What can you learn from this? Death is not the opposite of life. Life has no opposite. The opposite of death is birth. Life is eternal.
death is not the opposite of life. Birth is. Wow. That one really defined in a very concise way a lot of what I think about and see even on a daily basis. You know, it's fall and people, I drive around and watch the leaves falling. And, you know, I used to think, oh, the tree is dying. No, the tree's not dying. The tree is going into a slumber for winter.
Rebirth.
And the leaves are going into the soil. And Eckhart just described that so perfectly that I think it's a great starting point to again, yeah, sort of talk about personal experiences. Now, I know for me, and I have been blessed, and I just want to share this with everybody. I'm so grateful for spirit, and everybody has a different way of getting with spirit and whatever you want to call it. But I recall several times in my life where spirit of loved ones who have been lost have visited me literally. And I mean, I have sat one night and was listening to music, and my wife Sheila was gone on a trip, and I just had my head back and my eyes closed. And the next thing I knew, my dad was there playing the organ to the music, and it was rock music, but he was playing it perfectly. And just this feeling of smile. And I could list many, many other ones, but I wasn't at that point to receive that until I had actually sat with the grief and gone through my own very personal processing of it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Feeling other spirits like through your core is a very real and personal experience. And I'm sure that everybody, you know, many people have felt that. And then what he said about that everything is ongoing and continuing and rebirthing and reprocessing and becoming anew, always stuck with me. And that's been very helpful words, because it's like the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where this concept of once something is done, it can't be undone. And, you know, in that movie, this idea of going back and you know, I wish I had never been born, or whatever it was that caused him to see what the world would be like without the impact of that person is kind of the same thing that Eckhart's talking about. And that is, once something has been done, it never dies. Once somebody has lived, he never dies. Because when you talk about the ripple effect of any action, we all understand that creates a reaction. Like they say, the wings of a butterfly on one side of the earth can do something to an elephant on the other side of the earth. It's true. It is physiologically true that these things are happening. And on a life, a human life that has been with us and has impacted us, never really dies, because those ripple effects continue for forever.
I remember sitting in the hospital with my mom, and we were sitting there waiting for her to be taken to hospice. And she said something about death, and it wasn't necessarily about her own. But I looked at her and I said, you know, Mom, I said, here's the way I look at it. I said, there's a physical loss, but everything, the energy just changes into something else. Everything just changes into a different energy. And so therefore your energy, your spirit is always there. And she looked at me and said, oh, that's a nice way of looking at it. And I felt embraced by that. But, you know, we talk about these being able and open enough to perceive spirit, that and our ancestors that are walking behind us daily. And a wise woman once said to me that it's kind of like the baby in the womb, when the mother and father are singing to it and talking to it. It can hear it, but it cannot physically experience their mother and their father, because they're in a different place. They're in a different completely different universe. And so, you know, I look at spirit in the same way, that it's just another level of connection that we don't understand. And there is promise of understanding it one day, even in scripture and other everywhere you look, there's the promise of experiencing it one day. And if you're agnostic, that's fine too. But you know, if you think about the life experience, and if you think about the energy in that fashion, you know, there's this great thing about the ancestral mathematics, and it talks about how many people behind you, in order for you to be born, you know, you needed 2 grandparents, 4 grandparents, 8 grandparents, and it goes on and on and on. But the mathematical equation is, it says for you to be born today from 12 previous generations, just from 12 generations, you need a total of 4,094 ancestors over the last 400 years. So if you can find a way to tap into that energy, you know that things are going to be okay and that they're still with you. And it's just a very real envelopment of the energy of love and gratitude for life.
And, yeah, I like the analogy used with the baby in the womb, because, you know, like you said, the baby doesn't know what's going on. It's just feeling. And it's feeling some outer sensation that is about love. And similarly with the ancestors, I mean, think about that. Think about all, when you talk about 12 generations and then all of the math that goes to how many parents are necessary for each of those people in the generation, that leads all the way down to us being alive. And I know you and I have wondered about that, because it goes far beyond 12 generations, right? I mean, we're talking about going back to the African, you know, origins. And
we're all related, baby.
And the fact that we have those genetic and energetic experiences as part of our existence is all there to be tapped into. And that's why when somebody passes, it's very helpful for me to remember that it's only the physical form that has passed. It's not the spiritual form, because that continues ad infinitum, in infinity. And so, you know, I remember when we finally, and again, coming back to my close friend in the memorial that we had for him, we did it like 6 weeks after his death. And then we did yet another one at his favorite place. That was kind of an ash spreading ceremony, you know, several months after that. So, and I had been able to go through a little bit of the grieving process at that point. But where we had gotten when we were able to do the ash spreading ceremony was, instead of grieving, more celebrating in gratitude the life that we had with this great person. And you know, and that's available to all of us, because every life is sacred. And you know, listen, that doesn't mean we jump straight into gratitude. We've got to go through our process of grief. But I feel like that's the comfort, is when you are at that spot where you can feel gratitude for what you've had instead of, oh, a sense of loss.
We know that each one of you out there listening is going to have your own unique process, and by no means are we saying that, again, we're experts on any of this. We just hope to leave you with a sense that you're not alone out there when this happens. And in a very interesting, energetic way, your friends in wonder here in this podcast, but also your friends in wonder around you, will always be there for you to help.
Embracing the grief and getting to gratitude is just, I think, the best we can do in tackling this topic today. And we hope in some way this was of value to those of you who are going through it or may go through it in the future. So thanks for listening.